gone. I buried him. I was a chaplain.
Is that so?
Pete Anderson, you know, the first man to climb Mount McKinley.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Taylor, Pete Anderson, I knew him pretty well. And Adolph Nelson, two-chord Nelson. He was here when Jimmy Duke was here, before there was a settlement. Duke and Nelson were here before anyone else, except the natives.
There was an Indian village here.
Yeah. So they tell me.
Uh-huh. But then, yeah. Was it your grandfather that homesteaded over here?
My grandfather, yeah. My dad's father.
Here in the Indiana area.
Yeah, I've heard that, but
yes.
I don't know just exactly where. Frank Jones is in Pioneer's Home, Fairbanks. Yes. His father had a homestead back in here. And that somewhere in the same neighborhood. Get away!
Well, then what...
Go on, Mike.
It's all right.
Pat.
This is Pat.
Put that on your recorder.
Good dog. Speak. He just wants a little attention.
Not just a little.
Not just a little.
I've got an old newspaper here somewhere in Nenana. Newspaper, 1921.
Yeah.
This town had a newspaper one time.
Yes.
Daily News.
Yes. Well, let's see. Not in Nenana going with the railroad?
Ma'am?
Was Nenana founded because of the railroad?
Yeah.
And did your dad...
This was the end of the railroad at one time.
Oh, it was?
They crossed from here by ferry in the summertime. And over the ice in the wintertime, they laid the tracks on the ice.
Uh-huh.
My dad worked here on it when they were building that bridge. He worked on the bridge or the approach to it.
Huh.
So I miss it a lick or two, you know. All he had to do was drop the hammer on the spike, you know, the hole there already, and tap it, and he missed a time or two.
President Harding.
Harding. Once, anyway. And this friend of mine, Wallace Calderhead, that gave me the birch bark canoe.
Yes.
Was making a replica of the bridge. Pure. It was, and he had his back to a, he had a little bit of a jewelry shop about the size of this kitchen. A little round ventilator over the door. And his workbench in the back, you know. And us kids would go over there and torment him. And so one evening we were over there having our fun, and I tossed a snowball, made a lucky lick, it went through the ventilator and landed on his workbench, and he got up and he outran me, he caught me.
Oh.
And I thought I was really going to get it, so he took me by the scruff of the neck, and the rest of the kids stand back watching. I was kind of one of the leaders. He cooled me off. He took me back in and he explained to me why he didn't want any snowballs on his workbench. He had this bridge, there was silver piers and gold. The rest of the arch was gold. It was all gold and silver. And really delicate work, you know. It was about, I guess, about 8-10 inches long. And
there was, it was a bridge.
Yeah, he was building this bridge. I'm not sure, but I think it was the people in the town, I believe, got together and raised the money. I think the pioneers, and I don't know for sure. It didn't interest me, you know, just a kid, but the town, I believe, had that.
And this was a replica of the railroad bridge?
Railroad bridge, and it was a present for Harding when he got here.
I see.
And I've heard that the spike was, he had the spike there too, but I heard that the spike was made in Anchorage, but I always thought it was made by Calderhead there in Nenana, but I'm not sure about that.
I see. Well,
I saw it there. So we let him, we left him. We let him alone from
there. You didn't put any more snowballs down his stovepipe.
No.
Well, that's cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing I can remember, you know, would be interesting. I don't think there's not many here that remember that or were there. When Sir Hubert Wilkins was had his backup crew here, ground crew. They were going to Point Barrow with some snow. Cats, they left here, they were out here on the ice, and everyone in town was down there to see them off, and they had double enders, horse sleds like the mail carriers used here. They were double-ender sleds. And I forget the name, but they had four or five behind each power vehicle. And so when they started to move, everyone started piling on, kids, women, men, you know, piling on to have a little ride on it. They say they'd ridden on it. Well, there was such a load on there, and they couldn't get traction on this glare ice. So they had to kick us all off so they could get going. And they only got down here around Tolavana, and they couldn't climb steep banks or anything with them, and they abandoned them.
Is that so?
My dad was leaving here at the same time with a geological survey. They were using dogs, and they passed them down here. Tolavana, I've got some pictures here of that. My dad passing these rigs, they were broke. That was the end of their...
That was it.
That was the end of that part of the expedition.
They didn't, did they go on with the...
I think they went back to Fairbanks and flew everything.
I see.
My dad went on with these geologists up to Barrow with dogs.
Is that so?
That was 1926. I was supposed to go. He got permission to take one of us, me or my brother. My brother's dead. He was a year and a half younger than me. But he got permission to take one of us on this trip. And we weren't very old, you know, let's see, 1926. Anyway, we couldn't decide which one of us was going to go. We'd fight, put on the gloves, and couldn't settle it. So I think my dad finally realized that we weren't tough enough, old enough. He told us neither one of us could go because we couldn't decide, so.
Did you ever make a trip like that, ever?
No.
Have you ever gone overland by dog team?
No.
That'd be a long road haul.
No, I've never driven very far, 100 miles or so.
Is that
all
so?
I've ever. Mm-hmm. My dad done all the drug driving. I drove out here to hunt sheep, you know, some short trips, 50, 60 miles, and drove over almost to Lake Minchumina and back once when I was about 15 years old. My dad was carrying mail between here and town and all with horses, and he gave me strict orders. I told him one evening at supper that I was going to take this little safari out to see a trapper out there, a friend of mine. He said, "You're not going anywhere, not out of town with your dog team." You know, so as soon as he left, I left.
Is that so?
My mother couldn't stop me, and I took off. And it got down to 50 below. I stayed 3 days, so I had sense enough to stay in. I camped for 3 days in the cabin, and it got up to 30 or below, and I went on, finished, got out there, and visited for about a week and came back. But I was following the mail carrier too. I had no problem.
He was mushing.
Yeah, they carried the mail by dogs that way out to Kuskokwim. And I just followed the mail carrier.
Is that so? But your dad had horses.
Well, he carried from, they drove horses from this direction down to that route there. I don't remember why, but they tried horses first. My dad was one of the first ones to carry with, and they tried horses. Didn't work out somewhere or other. I've forgotten, so they switched to dogs.
I see.
They started out here at Kobe the first time they carried mail across country there. And my dad went from the NC, Northern Commercial Company, had the contract, and they used horses from here to Tanama, and dogs the other way. There's one old mail carrier up in the Pioneer's home. He's one of the very few that are left.
Who is that?
That carried that route out there. Bill Burke.
Bill Burke.
He's in the Pioneer's home.
Is he?
He can. I haven't seen him for two or three years, but he's pretty sharp. He could give you some stories. We usually know where we're at.
Mm-hmm. How many boats are there today? You said about four?
There's 10 on the Yukon. About four. And there's another little boat down there the Army brought in here during the war. That's the one I worked on last fall. They call it a small tug. It's got two gray diesels in it. And then the Taku Chief. There's only four that Utana runs.
What is the largest number of boats running at one time that you know of? A dozen boats running together?
Out of here? Boy.
Up and down the Tanana here.
I came up here by steamboat in 1922, and I don't remember too much about it. They were all steamboats then. There was a lot of them. But I can remember the old Sarah and the Susie and the Yukon. Yukon was one of the last boats to tap. Used to carry tourists from Dawson to here.
Is that so?
Or let's see, would it be Whitehorse? No, Dawson. Mm-hmm. Whitehorse up there through Canada. Mm-hmm. They hauled ore down here, silver ore, to the railroad here, shipped it out.
I see. This really, an awful lot of traffic came here to Nenana because of the... I mean, it was kind of a center of riverboat transportation.
Yeah.
And in the early days, did they ship, the big ships run up to St. Michael's and then transship there?
Yeah, to the steamboats, or riverboats.
To the riverboats.
From there.
Mm-hmm.
Tanana, and then Tanana. I lived in Tanana. I went to school there my first year, and I... That was a transfer point for a transfer freight to smaller boats, to shallower draft, you know. Some of the big ones couldn't come up here, or they wouldn't. Didn't pay them to, I guess, so they... longshore there. My dad used a longshore when he had nothing else to do.
Yeah. Well, how many transfer points were there up down the Yukon? What were some of the other rivers that boats ran up then? The
Koyukuk? The Koyukuk. And the Anoka.
The Anoka?
Anoka River crossed from Holy Cross. Anoka and the Iditarod. When they were mining there was quite a little traffic up there.
Is that so?
That was before my time, though.
Mm-hmm.
I made one trip up the Anoka to the headwaters.
As a pilot, or did you?
Yeah, as a pilot.
Do you see any difference in these rivers?
No. You know, that's one thing that I've never written a letter to the editor like Fred Stickman, but I could. But did you ever see Fred Stickman, that native from, did you ever read his stuff?
Yes.
Well, I guess I'll let him, I'll save that space for him, but there, the mayor wants to dig some, the city wants to dig gravel out of that slough up there. And some of these experts say they don't want them to. It'll ruin the, well, it'll landlock a bunch of fish and all that stuff. And I don't know what other good reasons. This Dr. Whedon, he really gets me. He should be busy out there picking up that muskox wool, you know, from bush to bush, and quit writing and being heard so much. He really drives me nuts. He was one the other day, he said he was against this digging this gravel. He didn't say why, but digging the gravel out of the river. And I've seen that done different places, that gravel, you know, and in a month or so, I know, I won't mention any places because they'll probably try to stop it, but they do it yet in places. And that gravel, you can't see a thing in the change in the river, and it'll be level again, the hole they dig, you know, with the drag line. It'll just level right off. That gravel in there is always traveling. Mm-hmm. It probably isn't in that Chena so much because there isn't the current that there used to be since they shut the water off there. It's mostly silt now, but there's gravel, yeah. I've traveled up there with boats, you know, clear up. When I worked for Civil Aeronautics, I had strict orders not to take the boat up to town. If we wanted to, we could walk up or paddle up. We didn't have an outboard motor. So there was another boating outfit, Doc Gordon had the Emma. No, he had the Elaine G and the Bonnie G. He built them there for free. He told me I couldn't get up there, so I had to show him that I could. So I ran this boat up there with it was four or five of us in the crew, the cook and four others, another pilot and two engineers, and the cook. So I took it on myself and I went up to Fairbanks. We parked under the bridge there, right at the bridge, at the foot of Cushman Street. And but it was gravel. Get stuck a little coming back down. Got back in the morning, time to go to work. and the boss was coming up by train. We beat him. We got down there and got parked at our barge where we were supposed to be before he got there. If he knew about it or heard about it, he probably did. He didn't say anything. Get away! Just rolling all the time, moving.
I missed this. And what were you telling?
Well, this deep sea diver, the Utana, brought him up here to dive for a couple of trucks that I dumped in the river. The barge was overloaded, and they tipped off the barge. The old barge started heeling over like this and heeling. I tried to turn. I thought maybe if I got crossways in the current, it might bring that low side up a little, and I was going to try to get to shallow water. I didn't make it. I started to turn, and they flipped over, and they were loaded with rock for these fills on this bridge approach here. And they went down 30 feet of water, and there was no one on the barge, so I had told them to stay off, and I made sure the fellow working with me seen to it that they didn't get on the barge. And no one was on there when they flipped.
When the barge flipped over?
The barge didn't flip over, but it tilted so much that these trucks are top heavy with that rock piled up on them.
I see that the trucks were loaded with the rock.
Yeah, they were loaded with the rock. One big semi and another good-sized dump truck. And I knew it was overloaded, but we'd been doing it for quite a while now, for a long time. And I dreaded it. Every morning I'd go down, I'd meet the other fella coming off shift. How many trucks you hauling today? One or two? I'd say two. And then I'm going to earn my money. It finally happened to me. I tried to land, and I was way out in the stream. And I thought, well, I've done it before. So I pulled back and started up here. I didn't get up here. I got almost up, within 500 or 600 yards of the dock, and over they went. Right out in the But this diver went down and said it was the roughest diving he'd ever done. And I usually waited for him. I'd see him going down. I was running this ferry back and forth, carrying passengers. And I'd wait till he came up sometimes, because I thought if anything happened, you know, the engine quit, something, we went sailing down, we might take him right along with us. Hit that barge, you know, with the pump and the air hose and everything on it. We came close once, and the engine quit on me, and we went sailing down there. And it happened pretty fast, but I knew he was up on the deck. I started to back out. I saw him climb out of the water. He was up on the deck, and I backed out, and the engine quit. We went sailing down. I don't know how. We cleared this barge that was anchored out in the middle of the river. We went around it, missed it. Got the old engine going, went back up the river. Started hauling the passenger, but that gravel is just flowing all the time. You know, I can't see it where it can do any harm.
To dig the gravel.
You know, to dig gravel. That's better than digging a hole out here out here in the brush somewhere. Mm-hmm. You've got another gravel pit out there in the river. You can't see where they've been dredging. I've hauled a small dredge down there at Galena. Between Galena and Campion, we moved the dredge around there. They were dredging out of the Yukon. A shelf there of gravel along the cut bank.
Now, this wasn't a mining dredge. This was a dredge to clear the river? Or?
It was just a drag line, a bucket, you know, and a drag line. They do that some here in the fall when the water's low, so low that they can't get in there with the boats to put them, anchor them for the winter. They don't pull these steel hulls out in the wintertime. They just leave them and they freeze in. The water's so shallow in the fall when the water's low, they can't get in there. It fills in there with gravel. Well, they'll clam this out, and they'll use the gravel here and there on the streets. And they'll dig it out, and in a little short time, it's filled right back in, level. Can't get the props off. They have to take the props off out in the Tanana, then pull the boats up there, tow them up with a small boat or a caterpillar, a tractor. Drag them or winch them back up there into that shallow water. Barely water enough to float. The boats need about 4 feet to float in.
Doesn't hurt the boats too.
No, it doesn't. And this river just doesn't break up rough. The Nenana River doesn't. It just rots out. It just floats out. It's not a rough breakup like the Tano or the Yukon. Mm-hmm.
I see.
But they dig all that gravel out of there. Not a lot. It's quite a bit.
What about on these other rivers where they have a rough breakup? What do they do with the boats in the spring then?
Pull them out.
Do they?
They have to pull them up on the ways or up on the bank.
I see.
Yeah.
They have to maintain these boats pretty much?
Yeah.
In the
they work on them every spring and overhaul them.
Have the boats changed in their design at all through the years that have been used up here?
I don't think so.
Yeah, other than going from steam to diesel now.
Yeah, they're diesel. Jim Binkley's got the old paddle wheel up there now for the last one. That's the one I worked on the ferry route here. I haven't seen it since he got it, but he's fixed it all up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's using it yet. Have you seen it?
No. No,
It's a 100-ton boat.
Well,
he's fixed it all. I think he can carry 300 or 400 passengers on it. He will be able to.
Yeah, it's supposed to be ready this summer.
Summer. Mm-hmm. I haven't paid much attention. I haven't seen any pictures of it. But I know he bought it from Utana or from Mark Peterson.
Pretty great.
I used to pilot that back and forth here. It was a diesel powered, but it had a paddle wheel, drive.
What's about the most difficult kind of cargo to haul, would you say?
Well, the cargo I hated was sack coal. We used to, on these small boats, we'd haul 100 tons, say, of coal and sacks. And on those small boats, the pilot wasn't necessarily a pilot, he was deckhand to get out there and wrestle that coal, hand truck it off the barge on a real nice hot day. And those sacks weigh at least 100 pounds. And that was a miserable job.
Uh-huh.
They converted, that was in the hospital at Tenno, I'm thinking of. They've converted to oil now. Everything is oil. And it's all bulk now. They pump it out. They don't use barrels and 50-gallon drums. It used to be all 50-gallon barrels. They weren't easy either. But now it's just, they pump out of the barges.
I see. In other words, the barges are tankers.
Tankers.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the coal? Where did that come from?
Came from Healy. Usabelli or Healy River, Suntrana.
Would that come down to Nenana on the train?
Yes.
And then transship it?
Yeah. And they'd sack it here and then load it onto the barges.
I see. Did you ever haul cattle?
No. No livestock.
No livestock?
No. I remember, though, when they hauled cattle. I can remember that. Seeing the cattle. You know, you see these crates of chickens, on the barges up on the roofs. They'd throw canvas over them, take them in cows. And of course, that was. I remember when I'd never seen a chicken close up. So I was living in Tanana, and our neighbor Thompson, Morris Thompson. Did you ever meet him?
No, I never did.
Let's see. He's got a nice job back in Washington now. He's the head of the Bureau of Indian Affairs for this division here.
Is that so?
For Alaska. Mm-hmm. Just got a point. He's a part Native. Well, his father got these chickens up by steamboat in the spring, and I was about 5 years old. My brother was 4, and we were waiting for him to unload them. We couldn't go. We were up on the bank. We were looking down there, I can remember. We wanted to see these chickens. Anyway, my mother put us to bed. And the next day, we were up bright and early, 5 o'clock in the morning. We dashed out of the house, out back over to this barn. And Thompson had a big chicken wire gate or door. I don't know why, but it was chicken wire mesh and a canvas hanging down there. We could hear the chickens clucking away in there. And we couldn't see them. There was a few little holes in the canvas. We were trying to peek in there. And I stuck my finger in one of these holes and a chicken had it right now. And I yelled my head off and tried to get loose. I was yelling, scared to death. My brother started crying. Then we heard this haw haw haw. Old man Thompson was there and he latched onto my finger. I thought a chicken had me. Then he rolled a curtain up, showed us these chickens. My first close up of chickens.
And did they come up on the boat then?
Yeah, they came up on my boat. And, you know, we had, our eggs came up by boat too. And they had to last all winter. They get pretty high by spring sometimes.
Lots of flavor. Lots of kick to flavor.
I went out for my first trip out to the States and my grandmother's place. She had a little ranch there in Kent, out of Kent, Washington. And I got up in the morning and she said, well, she fried me some eggs right out of the hen. Don, how do you, I didn't think it was funny. I didn't think it. How do you like the eggs, Don? She said, this is Kelly. I said, fine, but they don't have any taste to them. she laughed, you know. There was no flavor. Dad had the mail contract. That was during the Depression. It came in mighty handy, you know, right at the start of when the Depression began to be felt up here, I guess it was. And so that was a job for my brother and myself and my dad. Kept us in bacon and eggs for four
contract.
Summers.
The mail yeah. contract. For 4 years, he had the mail contract.
Yeah. We made it one trip a month from Nulato to Bettles.
Is it?
That's where I met Gordon Bettles. The town was named after up there. There's nothing there now. It's abandoned.
Oh.
There's no one there as far as I know. But his wife was a school teacher and he was a caretaker there at Keokuk Station, the mouth of Keokuk River.
Oh.
And that's.
He'd come up here as a miner.
Came up here. He was, yeah. Came up here, one of the first white men in the interior. Yeah. Long before the, I don't remember the history of him, but it's in the book somewhere.
What sort of man was he?
He was a nice fellow, real nice. I read some stories about him, how he was rough and tough and commandeered a steamboat here once and took over him and a bunch of miners. I don't believe it.
They took over
and he was the instigator. They hijacked this boat and they were going down to try some natives for murder down at the mouth of Keokuk. And the captain wouldn't give them his ship, so they just took it over. And I read that somewhere.
Yeah, but you don't believe that story.
No.
Did you ever have any trouble with the river piracy?
No.
Nobody.
There had been a few things missing in the cargo at times, but never caught them. Never.
Did you ever haul any loads of ore?
No ore. I've never found any gold. I've never tried.
Yeah. Tell me, just got a minute or two left here. On these trips, those 4 years that you ran up there on the Keokuk?
Yes,
did you ever have any unusual experiences on there? Piloting there?
No. It's a nice, exciting ride, though. I used to like it when I was younger, to come down from Bettles to, well, especially from Bettles to Alatna, it's 80 miles, and it's swift and split up. You got to know the channel. You just don't. You have to know ahead of time where you're going. Make the turns. That used to be good. We used to kind of take pride, you know, in being able to see who could get down there the fastest.
How big a boat now was it?
Well, it was only carry about 100 tons.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good size boat.
A small boat with a.
With the big barge on the front of it.
With the barge, pushing the barge. We could carry these two of these barges are still on the job. They're tankers now. One carries 30,000 gallons and the other carries 50.
Oh. How fast would you come down there?
Oh.